The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greeting friends around the world. Why are more and more Americans turning to drugs in an attempt to escape from their problems? And today, mental health is one of the most serious and pressing problems of our time. Escapism in gigantic proportions, people trying to escape their misery, their job, their boss, their home, their wife or their husband, their in-laws, trying to escape the neighbors, trying to escape the bomb, trying to escape the draft or taxation or physical disability or something. But you know, one out of six Americans today uses a pill bottle to change his mental attitudes and perceptions. And you know that increasingly people in Britain, in South Africa, in Australia are going to the beaches, into the mountains, into the pleasure spots. Now that's not wrong in itself, but doing so more and more fervently, more and more frantically, trying to get in that last visit before the world blows up in their face, like the one young person who said, as I've quoted on this program many times, "Sure, I want to get to Europe this summer, because who knows whether Europe is going to be there next summer or not." We've become, said Dr. Dan Casriel, a New York psychiatrist, a nation of pill takers. It's as simple as that. It's tragic but true that more and more people are walking through life with a chemically produced filmy veil, sort of like rose-hewn glasses of their own fancy that is drug-induced, and this is the way they view people around them. I don't know how many ads you hear anymore about somebody getting a raise, or how he's a better golfer, or he's not snapping his kids anymore, or the wife is not tearing her hair when George goes off without kissing her goodbye or something. And it's because they're taking this or that kind of a pill. They're able to work in great ease and relaxation. You know, you look at some of the modern offices today, and they've got pipe music. They've got all of the modern conveniences at hand, and then when you add to that all of the cigarettes, and then the coffee, stimulants and repressants, in other words, and then you add to that all of the various pills that people claim they're gulping in order to work in a tranquil, relaxed state, you really do wonder whether anybody ever gets very much done. But Dr. Robert Felix, who is director of the National Institute of Mental Health in Bethesda, Maryland, said today about 60 brands of tranquilizers and energizers are sold, and more than 95 million prescriptions are written for them every year. But of course, many brands don't have to have prescriptions. Another psychologist said people today must learn, and some are learning, through violent sickness and even death, that drugs are no solution to life's problems. Now, one of the reasons many Americans, Britons, South Africans, Australians, and peoples of the Western world, and even once in a while you see it cropping up in Japan, are turning to various forms of escapism is because our marriages are falling apart. Because the place for escape, the place to let a little steam off, the place to come home and have the problem solved and the brow unfurled and the worries assuaged is the home. And the place where all the problems ought to be met squarely together and solved, and the place where all of the relaxation and the enjoyment and the diversion and the pleasure and the inspiration and then the determination to carry on the next day, the place where this belongs is in the home. But the homes don't have any of that anymore. At least not very many of them. So, right on the heels of this great problem of mental health and of the preoccupation of people to escape their miseries and worries is the fact of the breakup of the modern home. And divorce is increasingly becoming public enemy number one, because the home and our families happens to be the building block of any true free society. And we are busily seeking to destroy the very foundation of our society. Some of the marriage and divorce statistics are almost unbelievable. The views of authorities on the subject, what they have to say, the statistics gathered as a result of the divorces around the country and around the world. For instance, Australians are divorcing at the rate of 1 an hour. And Britain had 40,000 marriages break up in 1965. That's exactly 4 times the figure of just before World War II. So you can see how we've changed in our attitudes and habits since the war. In the past 100 years, population around the world has increased 400%. but divorce has risen 7 times that. 7 times greater, proportionate to the population increase around the world. Now, in the United States, there are more than 6 million Americans, that's a pretty good segment of the population, now divorced or separated, and every 1.5 minutes there is another American divorce. For instance, of 1,000 divorce decrees granted each day across the nation, there are about, in other words, 400,000 of them a year, these divorces affect, directly, 300,000 children. Every single year, another vast group of 300,000 children directly affected, and of course many others that are the relatives and in-laws and friends and so on, school chums of these children who suddenly find themselves with no home to go home to. It's about time we took a look at some of these statistics and asked ourselves why. And that's why on the World Tomorrow program I've been in a series of the 7 major keys to marital success, or you might call it 7 major keys to selecting a mate, how to correctly intermarry so that you know your marriage has at least some kind of a chance of success. And I had begun to show you some of the statistics about what's causing a breakup in homes today, how people are so absolutely concerned with themselves, the ideas of the average person about falling in love, and how his dating practices are entirely selfish and admittedly so, what the counselors and the divorce lawyers and the judges, the sociologists and the psychiatrists and all the rest of them are saying about it. And as I've remarked to you young people listening, teenagers and others, this isn't the opinion of some old fogey or a collection of doctors and others who are way out of touch with what the young people want. Well, I have before me the statistical evidence. Happens to be a collection of the lessons written by multiple thousands of young people. Personal, first-person quotations from the young people, letting them talk about it, letting them say what's on their minds and talk about their dating customs and habits. Now, every year, 1,800,000 eager, hopeful couples get married, and an awful lot of them are young teenagers. Matter of fact, 40% of that number are between 15 and 18. That a little shocking? It ought to be. Listen to that. Every year, there are 1,800,000 couples, that's not people, who get married. But for that 1,800,000 couples who get married in the United States for the moment, just talking of the United States, but the proportionate statistics would be somewhere in the same ballpark in Australia or Great Britain or somewhere else, 40% of those are somewhere between 15 and 18. But in half of those cases, the parties have known each other less than a year, but the trouble is, ultimately, 1 out of 4 of them, and it's rapidly getting closer to 1 out of 3, will get a divorce. In the Los Angeles, Hollywood area, which is the merry-go-round area of the world, the figure is 1 out of 2 every other. Now, 30% of the total divorces around the world are granted in the United States, though it contains only 6% of the population of the earth. Can you imagine that? It's a modern disease of ours. Some people, of course, approve of it. Some people figure you ought to shed wives about like shedding an old overcoat. And others are equally as sure that you ought to shed husbands in the same fashion. Many people claim to be quite chic and flippant and casual about the whole thing, but of course their life stories are something else again, aren't they? How many people have you known who have been really happy? I don't care what they say on some television interview. I don't care what they say for the reporters. If they happen to be someone of note in the entertainment field and they've just shed their 6th husband or something of this nature. In the words of Jacob Paul Getty, who said he would give all his millions for just 1 happy marriage, I imagine deep down inside many others who have had 6 or 8 failures in a row, and that's what they are, not successes. Many people think that's successful. The more people you marry, the more successful you are at marriage. Well, I say the more people you divorce, the less successful you are, and the more of an absolute flop and a miserable, wretched mess, and you can say this being even a lover. Let's put it that way. Many of these people who are on the marriage go-round, or the marriage not go-round, as the case may be, have the image before the world of being great lovers. It looks to me like they're complete flops at it. Because if they were great lovers, wouldn't the person that they marry want to stay with them and vice versa? It doesn't make sense. No, they're not great lovers. They're absolute wretched flops at the subject.
So it's about time we took a look at that critically and asked, is this custom good? Is it something you want? And when you sit around singing the second time around, you really mean it? Is that what you want for your little blonde daughter? Is that what you want for your young teenage son? Is it what you want for yourself? Oh, we like to kid ourselves and sound chic and modern and up-to-date and kind of casually toss off all of our deep and bothersome problems, but we're not getting away with it. We're really not getting away with it. It's a confession of human failure when you look at the marriage and divorce statistics of our modern societies today. And it's about time we took a look at it. Now, what these people, as if with one voice, say about it is that our divorces are the result of our practices of, quote, falling in love, end quote. That our divorces are directly relating to the practices of dating, of what leads to marriage, of preparation for marriage. So I've begun a series of programs in covering 7 major keys on how to have a successful marriage. 7 major points about how to select a mate so that marriages can be happy and people can live together in absolute happiness and a sense of fulfillment. I talked first about physical health and how we ought to consider carefully the physical health of someone. That doesn't mean there's no chance for happiness for the handicapped or those with various chronic disabilities. It doesn't mean that people with weight problems should never be married, nor that people with various physical debilities or even deformities should not get married. But it does mean, and it does strongly imply, that anybody who is contemplating marriage ought to consider very thoroughly, deeply, and with both eyes wide open the physical health not only of the prospective mate, but also of his or her parents, their background. Divorce counselors all recognize that many of the psychological problems that crop up in later years because of a hasty marriage between two people who were not really mated in every respect are because maybe one of the mates or the other happens to grow old before his time, or I mean physically sort of falls apart. Now, I know by the statement about the wigs and hair pieces today that an awful lot of people are getting bald before their time. I imagine it's far more disgusting or disappointing, or however you want to put it, to a husband in his early 30s, or maybe he's just barely looking over the hill at 40, to see his wife almost bald than it is the other way around. And yet, if the true statistics were known about female baldness in the world today, you would be utterly dumbfounded. I've heard some people theorize there are more bald women in the United States of America than there are men. And you can go to any public concert, and if you find enough people around who aren't ashamed to at least wear their head the way it really is, you're going to find an awful lot of shiny heads in the audience. And that is a shocking statement. I can't prove that theory, and I won't even try, but I know the sales of women's hairpieces is way up. Now, I would advise it. I mean, who wants to see a bald-headed woman? I mean, it's been acceptable. If we look and we see a bald-headed man, it's sort of a sign of, well, look at Joel Brenner. I think he even shaves what's remaining on his. But I think that for a woman, it's not quite so desirable. Well, these things should be considered ahead of time. There might be a wife who still feels quite young, still desires to live more like a young person. She's maybe 39 and doesn't want to admit it. But she resents having to live a staid, dry, dull life, or the husband figures that the pipe and the slippers and the newspaper are enough. And the truth is, not very many people think very far beyond the honeymoon, when they should be thinking of next year, the year after that, and the next, instead of just the gay social world. You're not marrying the gang or the crowd, you know, just one person. You're not marrying a family or the kin or the in-laws. You're marrying just one person. So we talked about physical health and about diet, about obesity and about deformities and about knowing about congenital deformities in the family. Just the physical, chronic debilities of people in the United States are frightening by themselves, let alone many other countries you could cite. Second, right on the list, and certainly you can't say one is any more important than the other, and they all overlap, is mental health. It's becoming a problem of really frightening proportions. For example, it's estimated that 1 out of 10 in the United States of America today has some form of mental illness. But only about 10 to 20% of these, and that's over 19 million Americans, remember, and only about 10% of those, or 1,900,000 in other words, are getting any kind of treatment. Now that means that there are vast groups, reservoirs of groups, and remember that
Over 50% of the population in the United States is under 26 years of age. Think about it, kids and young men and women. Think about it. Look at the stats and ask yourself, what's the field? I mean, what are your horizons? Where is the chance for you to meet just the kind of a person that you feel you want to marry? Probably a pretty good chance yet, but you ought to look at it. Now, for instance, in this vast reservoir of marriageables, is the most unhappy man on the earth the American, British, Australian, South African, or Nepalese, for that matter, bachelor? Now, to a hostess, he is the indispensable dinner guest. But to the husband, he's envied because the husband figures he's having a ball. At least that's the show that he puts on after the second martini. But when you look at him real closely, you find that the bachelor of the modern world is not quite so happy as you might think. For instance, according to the American Journal of Psychiatry, you would expect to find those men who have escaped marriage to be much better adjusted than those women who have failed to marry. You know, you figure that the man is successful if he escapes, and the woman is a failure if she fails to marry. This is the view, and it made great hay over and provides a lot of copy for old Broadway plays, novels, and movies, and the like. But the truth is otherwise. For example, in interviews with hundreds upon hundreds of men and women, and they were 23 years old and more, this study found the bachelor is nearly three times as likely to describe himself unhappy as a single girl, and he was four times as likely to dislike his job. And remember again that single unmarried men comprise 25%, one-fourth of the adult male population. But that one-fourth of the total adult male population were ranked highest in severe neurotic symptoms. For example, they fear close places or heights or catching diseases or think somebody's following them or something of this nature. And they were also highest in, listen girls, because here is the vast untapped reservoir of marriageables and potential young males, antisocial tendencies. In other words, hostile toward parents, toward law enforcement agencies, toward the powers that be, toward government, toward educational institutions, police forces, and what have you. Absolute antisocial tendencies. And significantly enough, more single males than single women were willing to confess they had unhappy childhoods. And this might have had a great deal to do with why they were remaining unmarried. Now, one 41-year-old bachelor explained his single state to interviewers in this survey that was made. He said, what I saw of that marriage was enough for me. He meant his parents. Continuous fights day and night. There was a report on alcoholism by the National Institute of Mental Health, and that did concede that single men have remained less domesticated than married men, retaining the traits of a desire for independence and freedom from conventional rules, but it contended that the bachelor's life may grow increasingly dismal. Now, there was a study that proved that between the ages of 20 and 44, nearly six times as many single men as husbands die of influenza and pneumonia, and I think that's significant. You know, a lot of men maybe just need somebody to cover them up at night. Marriage, in fact, may be a lifesaver because when you look at what single men are doing to their health, they tend to belt the booze a little heavier. They tend to take far less care of their physical health regarding diet and physical exercise because their lives are just not normally ordered or right. They just have an oddball, weird, way out, three-cornered some kind of a life that is very miserable, unsatisfying, insecure, and unhappy. Now, don't let me hurt any bachelor's feelings. If some of you bachelors are confirmed old bachelors and you want to stay old bachelors, well, help yourselves. But the studies are accurate, and they're taken, if you weren't one of those who happened to be interviewed, they're taken from a very vast representative group of bachelors. Out of every 100,000 adult Americans, the suicide rate for bachelors was 33.2 per 100,000, where it was 11.9 for married and 7.7 for single women. Now, bachelors, as you might expect, totally disagree with this study. That's always very funny, that big, lengthy studies, you know, that really plumb the depths of different representative groups to come up with an overall statistical analysis of various opinions can be just violently disagreed with on the part of one or two or a handful of people.
And people would say, well, most bachelors I know are happy and they're productive and they have a lot more fun than married people. And oh, sure, sure, sure. He shifts his cigar from one side of his mouth to the other and says he's happy. Well, don't you believe it, people, because a lot of bachelors like to try to kid a lot of people, but what they think about in their own solitude and what goes through their own minds is, of course, something else again. Now, the life of the bachelor versus the married man is sort of like that versus the entrepreneur versus the corporation man. Bachelors, however, may not be the only group to learn something about themselves from this report, because in addition to the bachelors and the single women, married men were also studied, and when you looked at the whole group altogether, the least unhappy group of the four was, on the whole, the married man. And that was revealing. Now, a panel of Long Beach psychiatrists has declared that mental illness is the nation's greatest health problem, and here you have this tremendous percentage, over 50-some percent of Americans are under the age of 26. A quarter of the adult population in the United States are unmarried, single men. Now you think of the fact that 1 out of 10 Americans, not just men, but 1 out of 10, period, men or women, have serious mental disturbances that ought to be treated, and you begin to sort of put 2 and 3 and 5 and 4 and the rest of them all together, and you get quite a picture. That first of all, unsuccessful marriages, unhappy marriages, and then the fact of no marriage at all, along with our glittering, glamorous world of thrills and sensual pleasures, of bad diets and of meals eaten hastily on the run, and of too much alcohol and too much entertainment and too much staying up nights and not enough of the right kind of exercise and even wrong thoughts and so on, is doing all this to us, and it's a problem of real frightening proportions. So mental health is a real important point to consider. Now, overlapping them both comes a third major key to the selection of a mate, and that's background and breeding. Now, it overlaps them both because, of course, if you look into some of the origins or the causes of mental illness and even of physical debility, you will find background and breeding can have a great deal to do with it. In other words, we're saying heredity and environment, or environment and heredity, if you put it the same way, background and breeding. Now, primarily, that implies race, but it implies also color, height, shape, weight, stature, texture of hair, heredity and environment. So you should ask questions, and you should think and ponder and get to know the parents and meet the relatives. You should know even maybe some of the aunts and uncles and the grandparents' picture on the piano there or the mantelpiece, and find out what kind of people they were. What kind of stock did they come from? What have they accomplished in life? What about their education? You know that in the last 100 years or so in the United States, we've become quite a melting pot of many, many people. 42 million immigrants in the United States just since the very late 1800s. That's an awful lot of people from other places. Now, it's not wrong for people with the various European backgrounds or other countries to meet and to marry. Not wrong at all, but you ought to consider the problems inherent in various marriages, and especially those that married outside their own social and cultural level. Think about it. Consider the problems inherent in mixed marriages. Consider the problems in miscegenation and the fact that most states have laws against it, and ponder why such laws. Think about the lives of those that you might have known who have married outside their own race, maybe a GI who married a girl of another country. That doesn't say that they're not married, but you ought to ponder it. You ought to think about it. If you're an unmarried and you're contemplating marriage, or maybe if you are an old bachelor or a single woman and you thought, well, I've never seen a successful one yet. Why should I want to get married? Well, at least think about it. Give it a little bit of thought. You know, an awful lot of cattle ranchers seem to be more careful about their cows and what kind of a bull they put in the pasture than some parents are about who their children date. And this is inexplicable. This is difficult for me to understand. Some people want to select their guppies with more care than they will selecting and having a little bit of counsel and advising their children about who they date and who they go to parties with. They don't seem to think about heredity and environment, what kind of a kid he is. I don't care if he's quarterback in a football team. He may have come from a murderously hate-filled home where his dad was so absolutely antisocial, and the reason he's a good quarterback is because he wants to get in there and bruise somebody. And the fact that he looks good in his uniform and you're jumping up and down waving a lot of crepe paper doesn't necessarily prove he's going to be a good supporter, a provider, a good husband, or a loving father. It just doesn't.
and the rose-hewn glasses of youth are very delightful. It's a lot of fun being young. Who was it that said, what a pity it is that youth is wasted on young people? You know, nobody resents young people having fun. And I certainly don't, because I work with and deal with and talk with and counsel young people all the time. I happen to be superintendent of 3 grade and high schools, along with some other responsibilities, and I'm with them in their activities and drop in on them sometimes in their classes, that type of thing. And I have a teenager of my own. I'm not out of touch with what teenagers say and think and feel, their outlooks and their responses and their opinions and their points of view. The only thing I'm concerned about is that these teenagers live happily, that they have the kind of fun that doesn't kick back the next day. They have the kind of fun where they don't have to go home and say, Mother, I'm in trouble. They have the kind of fun where they don't end up facing the judge and he says, all right, who did it? They have the kind of fun where it doesn't wreck their lives, destroy their minds, tear up their emotions, violate and pollute their bodies, completely twist and singe and sear their mental perspective and outlook. The kind of fun that is fun when it's still fun tomorrow and next week and next year. If it isn't fun then, it's not fun now. You're just hanging a wrong label on it. So consider these problems of background and breeding. And wonder where they came from. What is the background? What about the cultural, the social levels of the heredity and the environment of this person? Keep your eyes wide open. That also includes thinking about the education of the parents, thinking about their travel, their experience, their religion. It includes politics. This, of course, strongly overlaps physical and mental health, but it's also a matter of mental outlook, not just mental health by itself, but mental response and attitude of mind. Ask yourself these important questions. Is he or she racially prejudiced? What kind of jokes do they tell about other racial groups? They look down on anybody? Now, if you're colored people, do you tell stories about Uncle Charlie? If you're white, do you tell stories about, and use a slang term, nigger? If you are maybe in the Chicago area, you got a lot of jokes about Polacks, have you? I've heard people pass those on. You tell, what kind of jokes do you tell? Now, maybe you tell some moderate, mild jokes, but what about deep down inside? What do you actually feel about superiority or inferiority of various races? Is he or she prejudiced religiously? What is the religious background? Is it widely differing from yours? What kind of jokes do you enjoy? Does he or she resent authority? Use good language? Sound fairly educated? What kind of an attitude toward higher education? What kind of a job is he or she going to have? What kind of a homemaker will she make? What kind of environment did she grow up in, and therefore what kind of an environment will she provide for the children? Think about it. It's really important to think about it now. Well, I'll have to break off here for lack of time. I'll continue on this same subject next time, so don't miss a broadcast in this series and ask yourself whether it's love or infatuation. And you people that may already be married, get busy and stay that way. And you people who are about to break up, don't do it before you write for this article on how to have a happy marriage. Give it a chance. You're the ones that said I do. Well, then do. Don't say I don't. Write for the article on how to have a happy marriage and the one on how to solve family arguments, and also this booklet on the plain truth about childbearing. Now, while you're at it, request the current number of the Plain Truth magazine with its article on the 7 keys to good health, and consider mental and physical health along with it. And the other articles in the current number, 52 pages, full color, throughout, absolutely free of charge, the Plain Truth magazine. You will not be billed for it. It comes absolutely without cost. And all you need do is send your letter to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.